personal, whether she was right on him. Other people might see a demon on him, you know. But these people existed, these bureaucrats. And the thing is that he never regretted. He felt justified with what he did. He said, I obeyed the law of my country, and the law of my country was Hitler's law. And I think that is interesting for us today, you know. How much do you obey a law? You have to think about the law.
Actress Barbara Sukowa is the star of Hannah Arendt. We were also joined by the film's director, Margarete von Trotta. The film has just been released on DVD.
Tune in Thursday and Friday for our holiday shows. Our tribute to Yip Harburg, blacklisted lyricist who put the rainbow in The Wizard of Oz. He also wrote the words to Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? And so much more. Then our discussion about Ebony and Ivy, race, slavery, and the troubled history of America's universities with Craig Stephen Wilder and Katrina Brown. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Berkrene, Felsar Amato, Nermin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Cassandra Lazare, Messiah Rhodes, Sharina Nadura, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, Jessica Lee, John Wallach, Vestica Darz. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermin Sheikh.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our host, Joe Uris. Today's guest is Rod Allen, a Navy veteran who experienced sexual abuse at the hands of an officer and who fought long and hard to get compensation and justice.
Tune in Tuesday night at 6 p.m. to Out Loud, KBOO's queer culture radio show.
Out Loud celebrates and serves the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning, and allied communities.
Out Loud features interviews with local and national community groups, authors, musical talent, and anyone from the queer community.
Connect with us online at kboo.fm/outloud. Tune in Tuesday at 6 p.m. on KBOO Portland.
The Recovery Zone 11 to noon this Wednesday to find out how our food choices may be affecting the environment, our health, and our relationships with one another.
If we really are serious about wanting to have peace on this planet, we have to look at the ramifications of our food choices. We're not some kind of species that is fundamentally flawed. We're always going to have domination and war and so forth. We're born into a culture essentially with an obsolete food orientation. And the beauty of the message is that we absolutely can transform our culture.
Learn more from Will Tuttle, author of The World Peace Diet, on the Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland this Wednesday, November 27th from 11 to noon. Your turkey day could well never be the same.
Tune in Wednesday at 9 a.m. for a special Political's Perspectives show. Teresa Mitchell will interview Michael Kimmel, author of Angry White Men, American Masculinity at the End of an Era. Hear about Michael Kimmel's research interviewing a variety of angry white men, from white supremacists to men's rights activists to schoolboys, to try to figure out what makes them so furious. That's Wednesday at 9 a.m. right here on KBOO Portland.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Merrillhurst University. With five part-time MBA programs that combine classic business skills with an emphasis on creative thinking, ethical decision-making, and sound judgment. The hallmarks of a liberal arts perspective. December 5th evening information session. Details at merrillhurst.edu.
When I was a lady's maid down in Drury Lane, my mistress, she was good to me, my master was the same. Along came a sailor, happy as could be, and he was the cause of all my misery. With his bell-bottom trousers, coat of navy blue,
she loved her sailor and he loved her too.
He asked me for a candle to light him up to bed. He asked me for a kerchief to take beside him just to keep him warm, with his bell-bottom trousers, coat of navy blue.
She loves a sailor.
Of day, a sawbuck note he left for me before he went away, and he wrote a message that if I have a son, let him be a sailor if he wants to have some fun, with his bell-bottom trousers, coat of navy blue.
She loves a sailor, and he loves her too.
And if it is a boy, send the beggar out to sea, singing bell-bottom trousers, coat of navy blue. Oh, he'll climb the rigging like the sailors used to do.
If my sailor I can't find on the bounding main, I am hopeful he will soon come home safe again, so we can get married and raise a family, dress up all our kitties and sail his dungarees.
Yeah, bell-bottom trousers, coat of navy blue. You know, that was a popular song toward the, I guess it was toward the end of World War II, and it was sort of patriotic and a little bit racy and very much appreciated. And there are several versions of it. But what it talks about, what is embedded in it, is a very romantic idea of joining the service, particularly the Navy, seeing the world, and like that. Now, when I was growing up in Southern California, the Navy was a major force, particularly in the city of San Diego. In fact, the economy was very much dependent on it. There were locker clubs. There was a whole culture of masculinity associated with the Navy. And kids, mainly from the Midwest, joined. Navy was a volunteer body. Joined the Navy to be sailors, to see the world, to experience the camaraderie and the excitement of both combat and all the other things that were said to go with being a sailor, including, I presume, approachable women. Now, with us today is Rod Allen, who is a veteran of the Navy, and his story is unfortunately not unusual. Yesterday in the New York Times, that is, yesterday, Monday, there, by coincidence, because we scheduled this before this, was a piece called The Untold Story of Military Sexual Assault. Not a very funny tale, but an important one. The Department of Defense's own studies of military sexual assault, a report published in 2012, says that by its estimates, that's the Armed Forces estimates, 26,000 members of the United States military, both men and women, were sexually assaulted in that year. The Pentagon survey almost certainly reports the scale of the issue. Of those sexual assaults, 53%, approximately 14,000 in 2012, were attacks on men. I want to repeat that. So about half were attacks on men by men. A vast majority of perpetrators are men who identify themselves as heterosexual. And this is really important, and I'm going to come back to this point, but my view of male sexual assault, whether it's against women, children, other men, or animals, or whatever, has to do with an identification with aggression and penetration as a male prerogative and a male empowerment. Thus, one can identify oneself absolutely as being straight, not gay, if one engages in sexual attacks on others, on men. So with us is Rod Allen, and Rod has a story to tell. I'm going to ask him to tell his story, and then I think we're going to ask for calls. The number to call is 231-8187. I'm hoping, really hoping, that we get calls from people who are both sensitive to the issue and are interested in this kind of very important opening up of the concept of what sexual abuse is about from the perspective of the reality of male aggression as culturally embodied in male growing up in the United States. So, Rod, why don't you tell us what your experience was?
Good morning, folks. I joined the Navy, volunteered in 1964, and it was right at the time when they were looking for a lot of warm, fresh bodies for Southeast Asia. And I had hoped to enlist as a non-combatant because I was somewhat familiar with the peace movement, the anti-war movement, the anti-nuclear movement. And I was 18, and they were starting to draft people, and my draft number was a real low one. I would have gone soon, and I didn't want to be drafted. I wanted to volunteer. So I went to basic training, and I went through all those hoops, got assigned to dental technician school, where I was a student. And during my time at the technician school, I don't know, I was in about my 10th or 12th week or something there. And I went out on liberty and got a hold of some booze and got drunk and ended up in a motel where there was more booze. And a guy approached me sexually, and you know, I was quite turned off by it. I was quite fearful. And anyway, what happened, and it really disturbed me deeply what had occurred to me. And so I went to the doctor, and the doctor sent me to the psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist sent me to the chaplain of the dental technician school. And so I told the chaplain I wanted to talk to him, and I beat around the bush and didn't really quite say what it was that I wanted to speak with him about. But what I wanted to speak with him about is what had happened to me and what should I do, and because that's not me. And so he told me, oh, well, we'll make an appointment on Friday, you know, at 1700 hours, and I'll pick you up and we'll go up to my house and have dinner and discuss this. And after getting to his place and starting to work on dinner, it became quite apparent that I was there not just for dinner. I was there to be his lunch or whatever. And the guy assaulted me the same way that I was in the motel room. And, boy, I'll tell you what, I froze up.
This is the chaplain.
This is the chaplain who was a, you know, 48 years old, lieutenant commander, had 18 years in the Navy, blah, blah, blah. And so when I got back to the base, I was shaken to my core. And one day later, on the weekend, on Sunday, I went to the legal office on the base because I'd figured there'd be the least people there I'd have to confront or face. And I reported to the guy that was on duty at the legal office what had occurred. And he said, oh, okay, really? The only other officials that I got to see at that time were criminal investigators for the Navy, the Office of Naval Intelligence.
Oh, the famous NCIS of television fame.
That's right. And these boys made mincemeat out of me and let me know in no uncertain terms that I was scum and, you know, that I was out of there. And they did. They drummed me right off of the base and threw me out with an undesirable discharge. I was 19 years old, and I had just been told that I was undesirable. And yet, I thought I had done the proper thing. You know, if somebody transgresses you, you rat them out. You tell everybody. So, as a consequence, I went for about 12 or 14 years before I ever told anybody what had happened to me in the Navy. I hid this like it was the deepest of darkest of national secrets. A good friend of mine that I grew up with who was an officer in the Marine Corps told me that my records could be changed if that were the case. And so I applied in with the help of Senator Patty Murray's office. She had a military veterans liaison person who helped me jump through the hoops to get my discharge upgraded from undesirable to a fully honorable discharge. And I had enough time in service to be eligible for veterans benefits. Needless to say, this stuff gnawed at me for many, many years. And, you know, it was a deep, dark secret that I didn't ever want to talk about or ever speak to again. I didn't want to have to face it. And when I finally decided I was going to face it and I was going to get my record straightened out, I got an honorable discharge. And I applied for compensation for what had happened in 1965. And I finally, a couple days before Veterans Day this year, received a letter stating that I would be given a 50% disability compensation claim. And that's... it absolves some of the people in the Veterans Administration. But it's not justice, you know. All the stuff that happened still hurts. And I've processed it and processed it. I was at a specialty clinic in Florida with the VA. And the whole reason for that clinic being there is to treat people who were sexually assaulted in the military. So anyway, that's my story. And my story is to encourage people who've had similar experiences or know of them, you know, first-handed, you know, do call in and discuss this and never give up, you know, never give up. Fight the bastards all the way. So that's basically my story, the long and the short of it. And I very much appreciate Joe having this topic of discussion. And it's interesting that it would come up in the New York Times.
Well, so, yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I think my decision, actually, you called me, and I've known Rod for since the late 60s. And never, of course, knew anything about this. Vaguely knew that you'd been in the service. Vaguely knew you'd done this and that. And the other thing, we're part of the the frontier of the culture of the hip world of that time. And I assume, and I always assume very naively, that the kind of experience you had was relatively rare. It took me a long time to begin to put together the pieces of this. If you look at the pornographic materials that are available, that were available in the late 60s into the 70s, one of the most common themes of the homosexual material is of sailors, very handsome sailors, very brutally big sailors, who take on younger men and abuse them, and it's put in a sexual context. At the same time that that has been a subculture within the subculture of pornography, there has been growing awareness of what exactly happens to young men and young women in the armed forces. The armed forces have been, for the most part, quite in quite defensive and quite unwilling to embrace this reality. Now, the armed forces are acknowledging that, in fact, homosexuality is not a disease and not a perversion, but a common, relatively common phenomenon, not a choice, but a behavior. And at the same time, so many men, and I'm beginning to discover this more and more, have experienced these kinds of abuse. Let's make a distinction between that behavior which we engage in for our own, because we want to, because we're interested, because we're curious, because we have desires, whatever, and that behavior, which is essentially victimization. And we have seen countless stories of victimization of women. More rare are, in the major media, stories of victimization of men by men. But the study by the Pentagon absolutely establishes that about half of the stories they know of in the year 2012 are essentially victimization of men by men. Now, remember, these are not the tales of people who are consenting adults. These are the stories of people who are victimized. And the numbers are staggering. And the problem that this represents, I think, still is the tip of the iceberg. And there's an enormous culture of denial around it. I think it's important to talk about this. I think it's important to understand something about male sexuality in terms of what do you want to call it? Nonspecific sexual aggression that is a phenomenon with lots of men. And I think it's important to embrace this. So what I'd like to hear from are people who have ideas about this, who perhaps were victims of aggression, men and women, because rape is not a crime. I want to be clear about this. Rape is not a crime fundamentally of a sexual nature. It is fundamentally a crime of power. Those, particularly Rod's case, is an important one. Here is a member of the clergy who's much older, who takes advantage of a young man who's finding himself in very great difficulty.
Gold stars.
And this is really important. And I think that these are really cases that need to be looked at and understood. I don't normally delve into this kind of stuff, but I think it's important. I think it's worthwhile doing. The number to call to share your experiences, not to attack, not to abuse, but to discuss, is 231-8187. Rod, do you have anything else to add?
No, other than, whenever there's any kind of physical assault of any kind, whether it's sexual in nature or otherwise, it's all of our duties to speak up and speak out and to stop the stuff, stop it. And the only way we can do it is by unearthing it. As I learned over many, many years of what I found out in this clinic for treating military sexual trauma is that very few of the people that are assaulted like this end up being basket cases like I ended up being with really chronic PTSD and chronic clinical depression. And it's only through my good friends and good fortune that I'm still alive is how much the incident, the two incidents in the Navy, how much that bent me and warped me as a youth. And when you're 19 and you're attacked by a 48-year-old, and he's got the scrambled eggs on his hat, and you got Jack anything on your hat, who are they going to believe? You know, and that's what my friend in the Marine Corps told me, who was an officer. He said, you know, you're lucky you kept your mouth shut, because they wouldn't have believed you. And that's the truth of it, is the people that are assaulted, you know, and I don't like the word victimization. It's just plain, blunt assault. That's all it is.
I actually want to share a little story about my adolescence. I find myself doing this in kind of awkward, but it's important. During a brief period of time in junior high school, and I was, for some reason, my parents put me in a private school for 3 years, which was supposed to be a safe place, a healthier place. I was a sickly child. This was a transition from rural life to the city life. And in that school, there was a very small number of people in our class. In the ninth grade, two of the boys essentially trapped me in a small room, costume room for the theater, and tied me up and tried to force me into oral sex with them. I resisted. I think their attack was half-hearted. Certainly they were bigger than I was. They had me literally tied up. There wouldn't have been much I could have done had they wanted to use a lot of force. I think they were playing with me. A teacher came across us, you know, entered the room and saw what was going on, a woman teacher. I was untied. All of us separately saw the principal. I kept my mouth shut. Our culture in school was very clear. We don't think on each other no matter what happens. And as far as I know, nothing was done to them. Nothing happened to me, except, of course, I bore the label of being gay because I was, and this is really the important point, I was the person who was aggressed upon. The definition of the outsider in these sexual encounters, whether it's an encounter where a woman is abused or a man is abused, is essentially to dismiss and diminish the authenticity, the validity, and the empowerment of the victim. And to a huge extent, I can't even measure it, but to a huge extent, the men who engage in these activities, and it's predominantly men, are using this as a power tool. And it is not, though there's definitely a sexual energy involved, it is not primarily, as far as I can tell, a sex issue. It's primarily an issue of power and the potential to degrade others and thereby build oneself up.
Assault.
So, yeah, assault. So I really think it's an important thing to discuss because I know it's part of our culture still. Even though we have finally begun to realize the normalcy of homosexuality, and we finally begun to not turn it into a crime, I think of Bayard Rustin, a guy I knew in New York City, who was very famous, leader of the civil rights movement, and another experience of mine, which is interesting. Bayard was arrested in L.A. Back, I don't know, way back. For being involved in sexual activity, consenting sexual activity. And this hurt his career and, in fact, made him have to be in the sidelines as he worked very hard to gain racial equality. But Bayard was also a guy who couldn't keep his hands off of young men. And I was a young man working as a volunteer or semi-volunteer in an office at the War Resisters League. And I finally had to quit doing that because he thought I was cute, I guess, or whatever. But he wouldn't stop teasing me. He wouldn't stop grabbing my ass and so on. It was a drag, and it was a very annoying thing. And it turned me away from a lot of very important political work that I could have been doing. So you know, I share that story because I'm of the opinion that these kinds of attacks are frequently part of the formative experience of young men and, of course, of young women. And we need to recognize their importance, we need to recognize their cultural meaning, and we need to understand that this is a problem in our society.
Yeah, and one other, Joe reminded me of things, you know, coming afresh here that, you know, I was involved in the theater when I was in high school, with high school theater, and was also with the amateur theater here in Portland. And there was, you know, there was, I guess, common knowledge that there were homosexuals involved in the theater. And my being around people who were of that proclivity, or, you know, that was their choice in life, they never bothered me. They didn't hound me. I didn't get hounded quite like Joe was talking about. And so what's really important is that it's not sex, and it is some other kind of cultural grooming that, and I'm sure that women have something that's parallel or similar to that. I can't quite define it, and it would be interesting to hear other people's opinions and your views on this.
This is a very awkward topic, at least it's awkward for me, and I think it's awkward for Rod. And and part of what's making it awkward, what makes it awkward for me, is it is the fact that one can be potentially a victim or a victim is unmanning. And that's the term I would use, unmanning, because the definition of masculinity, and I think this is where we need to put our attention. The definition of masculinity is in the idea of sexual aggression and sexual empowerment. It is disempowering to be the receptor to such aggressions. And I do want to hear from people. 231-8187, men, women, if you have been a victim or you've been a victimizer, this is an opportunity to talk a little bit about what you think was going on, how you feel about it, what the politics, and this is the important point here, what the politics of it is. It is, I also, another story, really simple story, back in 1967 or so, I was very active in school politics at Portland State University, and I remember the vets organization there held a smoker, as they used to call them, where they hired a woman who was stripped and walked around and stuff, and that was very, I was invited, it was an honor, very interesting. I wrote an article about it, which I can't even remember was published, but one of the conversations that defined my awareness of the possibilities of what Rod is describing in the Navy was a Navy veteran talking about how young men on board ship would be brought down to where the I don't know what it's called, drive shaft of the propeller shaft of the ship is, and bent over that, over the shaft area, and he thought that was a jolly fun thing and a nice threat to make towards some guy who he disagreed with politically. The use of and the ability to make a threat that is believable and sexual in nature is a kind of male prerogative that I don't think exists for women, and I think it doesn't exist for a great majority of men. So this is really about power. This is really about it has its meanings both symbolically and literally in the lives of individuals. To be powerful as a man, and I'm not talking about desire, I'm not talking about relationships that are consensual or anything like that, the ability to enforce one's will, to use one's sexual organ as an object for aggression, no love involved, no care for the other involved, is part of the culture of masculinity in our society. I really believe that. So that's something we need to talk about. That's something we need to deal with as a society. This is not new stuff, but it is important. And I would love to hear from people who want to and are willing to talk empathetically, if not sympathetically, about this. Do we have any callers? Brian, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Boy, that call log sure is empty there.
Well, it's, you know, it's scary.
It's a pretty
now.
Heavy subject.
Yeah, it is. It is. And there was no prep for it. And I appreciate the fact that people's private lives can be and should be private when they want them to be.
Sure. And, you know, I had the opportunity back in the 80s to work when it was still a county thing in Tampa for a rape crisis line, as well as working at the hospital with rape victims.
Uh-huh.
And it was an interesting, it was 6 weeks of training, and that was it. And, you know, they sort of threw you in the water. It required a tremendous amount of empathy. And, you know, but the whole thing is, you know, us being our age, you know, me in my 50s and you guys maybe in your 60s, is that correct?
I'm not even going to tell you.
All right, don't tell me. Yeah. But, you know,
over the hill.
I think what we fail, the only reason why I realize it is because of my background, but, you know, we have become, you know, this dog-eat-dog, you know, Darwinian and Randish society, you know, and it requires aggression. You know, it's fueled by aggression. And, you know, rape has at least gone up, you know, at the very least. I think it's exploded.
And, you know, there's no way to know that. You may be right. I mean, we don't have any stats.
And the thing is, too, is once, and I experienced this in the 80s, once people started publicly coming forward, you know, it opened the floodgates, and it went from one in so many to one in very few that we found out were, you know, had some sexual abuse in their life, men and women. And you know what I'm saying is, as long as we fuel this aggressive society, by the way, I'm a veteran of the Air Force. You know, you are going to get a lot of people who use aggression, you know, against others, even in their, you know, own, on their own team, you know, to, you know, hype themselves up. And that was a big part in the military, is, you know, how do you hype yourself up to go maim and kill people? Well, you know, you need to get some, you know, you need to work out to start. And how do you get rid of that aggression when you get off the field? You know, so, you know, the military, as it stands, and I don't think there's any way to rehabilitate it, is an aggressive, you know, thing. And I think that you shouldn't expect anything else but that kind of aggression in the military. So that's just my comment on
it. No, I really appreciate your call, and we'll see if we have other calls.
Have a good day.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Bye.
Rod, do you have some other comment?
Oh, no. It was good to hear from you, Brian. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I think that it is important to talk about this. It's awkward. I find it awkward. It is not pleasant. It is, however, a reality. The fact that the New York Times put this on the editorial page, and it's a big story, the fact that the military is beginning to examine these issues, particularly with regard to attacks on women, the fact that so many women in the services experience attacks, and men as well, is an indication of what Brian's talking about. I do not want to imply that military culture per se is sexually aggressive toward same-sex persons. But on the other hand, I don't want to dismiss that as a possibility. Remember, when you train people to be extremely aggressive, then you have problems always on these kinds of issues. So let's hopefully hear from some more people. Again, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO. My guest is Rod Allen. We're talking about his experience and, in general, experiences of men, but it can also be women, who found themselves receiving unwarranted sexual advances from men. The number to call, 231-8187. And incidentally, you know, Senator Gillibrand, a Democrat from New York, has introduced legislation to force and allow or enable military prosecutors to investigate and prosecute military sex assault crimes. But her fellow Democrats are shooting it down. Mainly Carl Levin struck it down. So there is a real resistance to it. Let's go to the phones, 231-8187. Robert, you're on the air.
Hi. This is interesting. At first, I was thinking, you know, this doesn't apply to me. I was never in the military. And then suddenly I had this aha moment and realized that in 1965, also at the age of 19, I was called in and interviewed by two police detectives privately in a small room about the fact that someone had told them that I had smoked marijuana. And they wanted information. They were looking for some drug kingpin or something, which I didn't have the information they wanted. But they were very firm, very aggressive with me. And finally they got to the point of, okay, you're going to go to jail, and they're looking forward to seeing you when you get there. You know, there was this implied sexual assault that was going to happen, and so I'd better cooperate. And I still get chills about it. It didn't happen. I didn't go to jail, but I realized that that's a power trip that is part of our culture. I bet it still happens. And I think we also need to look at sexual assault in our corrections institutions. I think that's something that shouldn't happen.
To say the least.
Yeah, but at the same time, a lot of people, you know, think of it as part of your punishment, or at least as happened to me, as a threat, you know, to get you in line or to get you to cooperate. And you know, I'm like as old as you guys, and I still just get chills thinking about it.
Well, yeah, and of course this is part of the ability of, this is the power of the state in your case to coerce and to frighten. And it is true that prison is a place where a sexual assault is normative, and where one's definition of who one is really depends on whether one is a receptor to assault or an initiator of assault. And there's a whole culture there that we all sort of know about, what we call under the Constitution, you know, not inhumane, not degrading, but in fact is exactly that in the prison system. And people know that. It's written about in novels. It's written about in nonfiction. But we are, as a culture, more or less accepting of it. And this is something that must change, that should change. And it really does pervert, that's an interesting word to use, but it's the right word, the whole of human relations consequent to this kind of aggression. I want to hear from more people. Again, we're talking with an old friend, Rod Allen, who's actually received, and this is an important point, the Navy has awarded him 50% disability in consequence to his experience of being aggressed upon in the Navy. I want to hear from you, 231-8187.
You know,
Linda, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you, Joe, for having this show, and thank your guests for talking. I really mostly wanted to call in to say thank you for the courage it takes to bring this subject out into the light of day and talk about yourself in a real way. It's so important. I know my brother experienced an attempted assault as a young man in a restroom, and he, you know, the effect on him, I was outside when he came out, was huge, and that wasn't even in a situation where the person had any authority over him or had the potential of destroying his life with the authorities above him or, you know, the authorities refusing to listen. And so I saw a little bit of that. I, as a female, was sexually assaulted multiple times by neighborhood males, not full rape, but definitely getting at my genitals and my breasts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, tied up at one point to try to make someone allow them to kiss me. So sexual assault is big in our society. It's so vast. And I think it's so important that you're focusing a show on male and male victims of it. And I know victim may not be a word anybody wants to apply to themselves, women or men. But when someone assaults you and you're left with the consequences to be on your own, you have been made a victim. And it's just, I'm just really pleased that you're talking about it. I think somehow, you know, that threat to rape, our military used that with the men in Guantanamo. All of the men we've imprisoned around the world, not each one of them probably got that specific threat, but it was a common interrogator threat used in this whole war on terror. I assume it's being used as we go ahead right now. We'll send you to this prison where they'll rape you. We'll put these men on you, and we know that Mozambique testified to having his penis cut. This horrible use of sexuality to express this aggression, and this horrible aggression really does need to be addressed. And it's It's just so important that you guys are talking, so I just really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate your speaking out and appreciate your input. It's so very important because we're all equally human, you know.
And these things affect us, as you said, through your whole life. I know there's some of us, like me, that are a little bit more post-traumatic stress prone, and we'll have more reactions, more ripples through the rest of our lives than maybe someone else. But all of us are affected throughout our whole lives. Our relationships change. We are changed. And this has to be acknowledged.
It infects families, you know, families that truly love and care for each other. Can be infected by this kind of nasty aggression.
It's also a form of bullying. We don't often talk. I was thinking back, someone was saying, boy, I was bullied. And I've always been kind of a tough kid. And, you know, when I was young, I learned to fight hard. I grew up in Eastern Oregon. You had to fight those boys, you know. And so I never thought of myself that way.
Mm-hmm.
But. Yep, there you go.
Well, and it is important. And I think in my case, my experience, I don't really, I mean, I think at the age that happened to me, so I must be 13, 14, there was more curiosity on their part than anything else. But they knew that that would be a degradation, that the very threat itself was degrading, and that it would bring me down, as it were. And
you don't know if they did it to other people. They learned that somewhere, or if it was done to them by older brother or cousin.
You know, it really raises some interesting questions about the culture of male sexuality that we need to explore as a society. I want to thank you for the call and give some others an opportunity. Again, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. This is Joe Uris. With my guest, Rod Allen, and we're talking about male sexual assault against unwilling men. But this is not a conversation limited to the experiences of men. It includes women as well. My operating assumption is that the definition in our culture of being a man has to do with being an aggressor, and it doesn't really matter who or what you aggress upon, as long as you are the penetrator, the perpetrator. And that is a part of our culture. And I don't think it's unique to the United States, by the way. There's a long tradition of sexual assault as part of torture or humiliation, not just in military situations, but in any kind of power situation, particularly in the world of private schooling, by the way, in Great Britain and elsewhere. So we want to hear from you. 231-8187. Nick, you're on the air.
Thank you. One of the issues that came up just a little while ago was the fact that we use homosexual rape as a punishment, and that it's part of our prison system,
mm-hmm.
and that anyone who is threatened with the prison system is being threatened with homosexual rape. A really scary proposition for any male in our society, and I think it's a way of keeping people from getting involved in protests of various kinds and for challenging the law.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think it's it's interesting. We bring up a topic like this, and we don't get a lot of calls. We get calls, but not a lot of calls, and I think it's difficult. It's difficult culturally. It's personal. It's scary, and for many people, it may, for all I know, and I don't know this, it may be suddenly having a recollection of something in one's childhood. You know, this is serious stuff, and I think it needs to be constructed in such a way that we don't feel like we were victims, but rather survivors. And the degree to which we were assaulted is a factor, but is not the most significant fact. I think the most significant fact is that we were unable to fight because we were overwhelmed by superior force one way or another, whether it was the force of authority or actual physical force.
The illusion of authority.
Exactly. I have to do this. This is a little bit of business here at KBOO. At 9 o'clock on Alternative Radio, journalist and labor and immigrant rights activist David Bacon speaks on immigration and U.S. policy. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, a report from Honduras on the presidential election. Also, a city council member in Santa Rosa, California, on the police killing of an unarmed Andy Lopez. And a new book about Lee Oswald raises key questions about the Kennedy assassination. At 11 on stage in studio, guest host SW Concert interviews Penny Allen, who helped kickstart Portland's independent film scene in the 1970s. And actually, I was had a bit part, talking part in Penny Allen's first movie. So there. At 11 on stage and studio, guest host. Oh, sorry. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Galavan interviews the photographer Isaac Lehman, whose large digital photo work is showing currently in Portland at the Art Museum as part of the 2013 Contemporary Northwest Art Awards. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on the Donate Today. You know, this station survives. 83% of its support comes from people just like you. So, you know, give us some money. Feel good about the station. Feel good about progressive politics. Feel like you can do something very useful simply by making a contribution. And we're talking now about the phenomenon of male aggression, not necessarily on females, but on males as well, in the military and elsewhere. My guest is Rod Allen, who was aggressed upon while in the U.S. Navy and whose life was changed very much, I think, in the course of all of that. The number to call is 231-8187. I'm not sure if we have any more calls. We scared everybody off. Sorry. But I do think, you know, I think about this a lot because I think it shapes one's way of thinking about sexuality. To be aggressed upon, however you deal with it, however effective or consummated, whatever you want to call it, it was, it makes you, I can only speak for myself here, but it makes you want to make sure you're not the victim. And in that process, you get hardened. Sorry, maybe the wrong term. You get a sense of need of empowerment. And I wonder to what degree, for all men particularly, that need for empowerment helps to explain a certain level beyond the hormonal level of sexual aggression in our society. I don't think we'll ever know the answer to that, but I think it's pretty important to think about. Equality for men and women, for gay men and straight men and so on, is difficult to achieve in a situation where power is the key factor in defining who you are and what you are and what you can do and what you cannot do. So this is pretty important. And I this is not our usual material, but I thought, Rod called me and I thought, yeah, let's do this. And I would love to hear once again from both men and women who have either been aggressive or have experienced unwanted sexual aggression in their lives. Sharing this is good for the society, it's good for us, and it might be, as many victims have discovered, good for them. So 231-8187 is the number to call. The topic here is actually focuses on Rod's experience in the Navy, where he experienced sexual aggression by two people, but particularly an officer in authority, and had to struggle long and hard to get this problem recognized. Finally, it was just this last year by the Armed Forces, by the Veterans Administration. This is heady stuff, not our usual topic, but I think we're making an important headway in the discussion. Rod, you had something to say.
Yeah, I think a progressive thought about this is we need to open it up. We need to address this all the time and recognize it for what it is. And, you know, our military leaders, bless their souls, they need to have a workplace that is compatible for human beings. And I'm not much of a militarist, although I think that sometimes it's been somewhat appropriate, but usually I think the aggression needs to stop, whether it's a nation aggressing others or individuals. It needs to stop. You know, think about young children. Think about young kids. How do you want them to be brought up? Certainly not like I did.
I think your point is very important, particularly about how this culture of aggression affects the lives of young people. Let's go to the phones, 231-8187. Brian, you're on the air.
Hi, Joe. I've been listening this morning, and I want to address you particularly because I, at the beginning of the show, I got really incensed because you were talking, I felt like you victimized Rod, and that, you know, he was not attacked. This was not a homosexual attack. It had nothing to do with homosexuality or heterosexuality. It was a physical assault on his person, period. He was victimized by a predator. And you kind of got off in this homosexual thing. It was just, as far as I'm concerned, it was off base. And
can you explain what you mean by that? I'm
yeah, I can. You were saying that, you know, you kept alluding to homosexuality as part of his attack, and it was not a homosexual attack. It was a predator preying on an individual. It was an assault. It's no different than me punching him in the nose. Well, it is, because it's a lot more traumatizing than a physical, you know, fisticuff assault.
Mm-hmm.
And you were, I don't know where you were going or where you were coming from, but I just really got angry at you because you were, I felt like you were victimizing Rod all over again.
No, I don't think so at all. I think,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, thank you for the call.
Yeah, appreciate your feedback.
And I think it's interesting how you perceive that. I want to take some other calls now.
Well, can I say one more thing?
Sure.
I think the big thing here is that what needs to happen is the light of day needs to be shown on the behavior.
Okay.
Exactly.
And that is the huge problem, is the light of day.
Exactly.
So, thank you, guys. I appreciate the program, and I appreciate you being there. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. You very much. Let's go to the left phones again, 231-8187. Ray.
Hello.
Hi.
I turned into your show a little bit late, but I was just thinking of probably one of the oldest stories of that sort of aggression is about Sodom and Gomorrah.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
When they were trapped. And there's several like that, actually, in the Bible. And I'm just concerned, too, that our society it's drifted so much. Like when I see ads, you know, even here in Oregon with, you know, like it's like shameless, you know, like guys chained up and dog collars on and all of this stuff. You know, I just wonder how this has all come about. And we're just like saying, well, whatever, kind of like that old horrible saying, whatever feels good, do it, or whatever turns you on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's come to a place that I wouldn't want my kids to see that ad, or even a parade with huge phallic symbols and everything. It just reminds me of, you know, that kind of decadence that was talked about in the Bible.
Well, that's interesting. We've kind of run out of time, and I thank you for the call. And I want to thank you, Rod Allen, for volunteering to tell your story. I hope it'll be useful to other men and women in our society. And I think stripping away the fantasies that are attendant to the abuse of others is a valuable service to the community. I urge everybody to stay tuned to KBOO. Our programming is really the best progressive programming, in fact, the only progressive programming in the Portland area. Stay tuned for more of it and the best music in the world.
Stand up and fight for what's right.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
KABOO is proud to present one of the greatest jazz films ever made, Round Midnight. Join us Thursday, December 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater for this 1986 American-French film that captured the Paris jazz scene of the 1950s. Watch jazz legend Dexter Gordon deliver an Oscar-nominated performance. Round Midnight, the Clinton Street Theater, Thursday, December 12th at 7 p.m., 2522 Southeast Clinton.
In conjunction with KABOO's presentation of Round Midnight at the Clinton Street Theater, tune in Wednesday afternoon, December 11th, when KABOO jazz host Rita Rega talks with bassist Chuck Israels about his experiences in the Paris jazz scene in the 1950s, playing with pianist Bud Powell, the real-life inspiration for the film. That's Wednesday afternoon, December 11th, between noon and 2 p.m. on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
Tune in Wednesday at 9 a.m. for a special Political's Perspectives show. Teresa Mitchell will interview Michael Kimmel, author of Angry White Men, American Masculinity at the End of an Era. Hear about Michael Kimmel's research interviewing a variety of angry white men, from white supremacists to men's rights activists to schoolboys, to try to figure out what makes them so furious. That's Wednesday at 9 a.m. right here on KBOO Portland.
And this is KBOO in Portland, where the time is 9:01 a.m. Coming up on Alternative Radio, journalist and labor and immigrant rights activist David Bacon speaks on migration and U.S. policy, followed at 10 by Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, a report from Honduras on the presidential election. Also, a city council member in Santa Rosa, California, on the police killing of unarmed teen Andy Lopez. At 11 on Stage and Studio, guest host.